Welcome. Hello. This is Will Morgan, and you're listening to 42 Minutes. Today is the 30th of October, 2012. If you've never heard of us before, and this is the first time you have joined us, we are a weekly Tuesday show based at syncbook.com. If you hit the radio tab, we talk about the answers to life, the universe, and everything. And we've talked to pro athletes, we've talked to college professors, we've talked to psychiatrists, and we've talked to the people, the very interesting people involved with the Sync community, and those involved with the Sync book. As always, I'm here with Douglas Bowles. How are you today, Doug?
I'm doing pretty good. I stayed up late watching a movie, but I'm doing good.
And was that Cloud Atlas that you stayed up watching?
That's correct.
So go ahead and tell everybody what we're doing today.
Well, you know, before I do that, I have to, while we have this opportunity, I have to tell our audience that William Morgan had his Sync initiation over this kind of weekend. There was a huge horror film convention in Orlando called Spooky Empire. And he went there with Andras Jones and passed out flyers for a complimentary Sync video called Jesus Babies. And if no one has seen this, I wonder if you Google Jesus Babies if it comes up.
If you probably Google Rose McGowan Jesus Babies in YouTube, it should come up. Or if you just search those things on YouTube, it does come up.
Could you tell us a little bit about this, Will? I mean, so this is...
A little bit about the experience, or a little bit about
the
video?
Yeah, tell us about the experience. What did you do, and why?
Well, let's see. It's after we did the show with Andras Jones, and I realized that it clicked. I mean, obviously Andras Jones gets it, but it clicks for the actors when you present this stuff to them. You know, I did a video for Andras and did a little experiment, not reading his book, did the video, and then once I read his book, I realized that I had, you know, pulled out a bunch of things that Andras had focused in on his life story in his book. So then
you read his composite character from his
right.
Work.
Well, we had always... you know, people had said earlier that the things that we see as far as synchronicities involved, like the quirky kind of individual peculiar syncs that, you know, because each actor kind of has their own symbol set that we've noticed, and those things relate, we had suspected, to the actor themselves. With Andras Jones, it almost proved it. So Andras Jones, when he was invited down to the Sinking Empire, this was the first time that the entire cast of Nightmare on Elm Street 4 was together again. It's something like a 25th anniversary or something crazy like that. I think the movie came out in 1988. But once he was invited to that, he was like, you're going to have to make it down there. And we decided that we were going to pick a particular actor that was also invited and see if we could do a sync compilation with them and then present it to them. And that's what we attempted to do down there. We decided that Rose McGowan, even though we were initially going to try to find a not as well-known actor, so it would be a little bit more adventurous and experimental, but Rose just has so many weird movies that... So we went down there, and I got to talk to her only for a brief second because she was so busy, but I also met...
Okay, so you made a sync video about an actor.
Right.
And then you actually met the actor and said, hey, I made this sync video about you.
Right. The hard part is explaining sync, because sometimes actors' like faces just glazed over when I was trying to explain.
Did you feel like a nut?
Oh, yeah. But that's one of the reasons I picked Rose, is because she's obviously pretty nutty. I mean, her relationship with Marilyn Manson and some of the...
So how did she respond to you?
She responded actually pretty well. I think that the best way to present it to her was... get her to do the connections herself. Like, I've noticed that actors know their roles better than anybody else. So if you say, do you remember that episode you did? It's not like you're going, you remember that episode of Star Trek you were in? And they were like, oh, yeah, I remember that now. You mention it, and they're like, yeah, and they'll start telling you stories about that episode, and they'll tell you everything that happened in the episode. So once I told her the connection, I was like, for example, you know, how did your parents die in Charmed? And she was like, oh, yeah, they died in a car accident. Even then, it wasn't said like that. I was like, you remember your parents, or I remember your TV show Charmed and your parents, and she finished my sentence, and she was like, yes, they died in a car accident. And I was like, great, perfect, we're on the right track. And then I said, you also, in Dead Awake, you killed Nick Stahl's parents, and you could see it dawn on her head. She was like, oh, in a car accident. And then I said, and of course, Death Proof, and she like leaned back in her seat and cocked her head. She goes, a car accident. And so that was like the cool thing for me, because at that point, I didn't really have to explain it anymore. Now, of course, there's a line of 200 or something people behind me, so I had to hustle it up. And I gave her my email address once her line had calmed down a little bit and said if there's a response to it, and she was really excited to do that. And then, on my way out of the hotel just to get a breath of fresh air, probably about half an hour after that, she comes out of a side door, and I bump into her again. And I looked at her, and I was like, you know, Rose, this is what we call a synchronicity. And she laughed. And then I started asking her about if she had actually had car accidents in her life. I mean, there's a lot more stuff in the video than just car accidents. But since that's the only thing that she had time to even experiment or experience was the connection with the car accidents, she started rambling. Actually, it was funny because she was walking with her agent and an obvious friend of hers. And they kind of walked ahead. Because she buckled back around to face me. Once I asked her to tell me some stories about some real-life car accidents, she was way into it. She wasn't hustling anymore. And then you could see her agent's face drop like, she's talking to a weirdo. Because obviously it was like...
So engaged.
Yeah, coming off like a deep space cowboy, you know what I mean? And some people really were interested in it. There was another actress, her name was Toy. I forget her last name. I just love her first name, and I talked to her a great deal. She did Nightmare on Elm Street with Andras, but she also, after that, became a producer. And she had done some other things, like most actors would have all the pictures from little steals from different movies they had been in. And she had a picture of the Pepsi commercial that Michael Jackson got his hair burnt on. Either she was in it or she was a part of it or something. So she had a picture with Michael with a big Pepsi symbol behind her. And one of her Nightmare on Elm Street shot had like a little hidden Pepsi symbol. So I walked up to her table just to say hi because we had talked about sync the night before. And I was like, well, there you go. You got two Pepsi symbols right there. That's like kind of a Pisces, a yin-yang symbol of balance. And she was like, whoa, that's really weird. And then about an hour or two after that, it might have been the next day, I don't know, she came up to me in the morning directly and she was like, I can't believe it. I was in the downstairs bar just getting myself a drink and some old cowboy guy walks in and goes, you guys got Pepsi? The guy was like, no, we have Coke. And the guy was disappointed. Nope, it's got to be Pepsi. She was just stunned. So it was cool. I mean, there was little things going on. Marilyn Manson was actually playing in town, and he was featured in the video for a second because of Rose used to being she used to be his fiance. There was just a whole bunch of weirdness that was going down there. It was really charged. I know Andras had a great time and was very excited too. And then certain actors that I ended up in weird hotel rooms talking to, I got their email addresses, and I'm planning to do videos for them as well.
Do you and Andras plan on collaborating more in this way? I know that he narrated this video.
Yeah, and it worked out well. Andras, I mean, one of the reasons why Andras was narrating this video and why Andras' name was on the flyers, because it gave it a little bit more credibility, if you get what I mean. It was narrated by Andras Jones, and you could go, yeah, and talk to Andras about it. He's over there with those guys. of Nightmare on Elm Street 4, or, you know, I could mention, if a group of people were interested in the flyer, I'd be saying, it's Rose McGowan, you know, Andras Jones did it. And then I could also say, Anna did a video for Andras Jones. So it was better for me that Andras was involved. But it worked out well because I messed up so many words, and when you do voiceover, you have to re-record sometimes or get certain parts right or you say things wrong. And it was so difficult for me to do the video and then keep going back to the studio and recording my voice. And this way we got the video done, I think, in half the time my normal videos take, instead of like 4 months, it only took us a month and a half, because I could be working on the video and send Andras. And also I have already made another video before I even left for another actress called Mary Lynn Raskub, which will be featured on Radio 8 Ball on the November 8th show coming up. And then Andras and I, because I initially, when I did the video of Andras, I was like, you know, I'm only going to do this if you can get me other actors. So, of course, Andras's connection with these actors makes it a little bit easier for them to digest if another actor that they know and trust is involved with it as well.
Okay, well,
why are we here, Doug? You got
okay. Wait. Yeah, that's so interesting. And we'll have to have Alan put a. I know you made a flyer for this event. How many flyers did you print?
Printed 500 flyers.
Did you pass them all out?
I left about 25-50 on Andras's table when I was leaving town. But yeah, I passed most.
Okay,
and one, I got Rose to sign one of them. I'm looking right now at Rose McGowan's little signature on one.
That's
particular.
Really cool. We'll have to have Alan post one on the show notes so people can go and watch Jesus Babies. And it's also interesting that you did this kind of Halloween-ish. I mean, there's definitely an undercurrent of, you know, the macabre in this video. And then Jake and Jim have a new video out called Cinco that's also very Halloween theme. But this is not why we're here. This is episode 55. And for some reason, that is the starting point I want to start with, because we all decided to watch Cloud Atlas because we thought that perhaps this movie would create an interesting sync dialogue, because it's not a traditional linear film in that you have a character that you're following. Because this is a multi-dimensional, multi-layered film, and so you have actors playing multiple roles simultaneously, which lends itself so well to sync. But the curiosity to me is, I want to try and deconstruct the number 55, and I just want to start there because I know that in the movie Cloud Atlas, one of the first numbers I saw, it wasn't the first, but one of the first was somebody lived in number 42. But then the Gators in Winnipeg decided 54 was the new 42, kind of. So they're talking about Ed and 54. And this is show number 55, and I've been seeing 55s, and I've been trying to understand 55. Like, what kind of meaning does 55 have? And the only thing I can think of is, like, Sammy Hagar can't drive 55, so 55 must be like moderation or something. But today we're speaking with Anna Day and Sybil Hunter, and we're going to talk about Cloud Atlas. How are you guys? Sorry for this really long intro. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Doing great.
Are you still with us, Anna Day?
Oh, man, I put Anna Day to sleep. See, Doug, we should have waited till after. I see him. He's right there on the call, but I don't hear him talking. Anyways, I didn't get to see Cloud Atlas, so I'm very interested. You say is it nonlinear, like you said? There's multiple storylines with the same actors going at the same time, or each story is
see what
is it
how
linear?
Would you, I know we're gonna do spoilers eventually, but Sybil, what would you say? How would you say it to someone who hasn't seen the film, like Will?
Yeah, it's definitely nonlinear, and it's just it's basically different timelines. It's like if you, I guess, kind of like the concept of maybe past lives and future lives. going on, and it's like showing all these different timelines, but they're kind of happening simultaneously, and so it keeps jumping from one to the next.
Now, did you, this is the thing that I was wondering about, was I didn't have any problem following this at all. My brain just, it was so enthralling and entertaining to move from, so the time breaks were huge. Parts of it were like 1849, and so you're on a ship, you know, and it has a definite 19th century feel, but then there were these other sci-fi stories that are happening simultaneously. And so, Sybil, did your brain try and say, this is one strand, this is another strand, and you try and keep them separate, or did you just mix them together and just, how did you?
No, I actually said the exact same thing you said. I didn't have any problem following the movie at all. It seemed so natural to me, and I'm sitting there just, I mean, understanding everything that's going on, and other people in the movie theater are just like, what is this? So, and I think I actually put a comment about that on Facebook as soon as I came home. I was like, this is so great. I don't ever want to watch a linear movie ever again because I like this movie, and I don't know if you've seen Looper, kind of the same thing, and it just makes sense to me now. I don't know because I've been so into cinema for so long now. My brain just is wired like this, but it's just natural to me. So there were parts in the movie where I was just sitting there, I'm laughing, and nobody else is laughing, and in the movie and things, you know. But it really seemed like a natural flow to me. But I can see, but it was really confusing to other people because I could hear them talking during the movie and after the movie about how confused they were.
And then at the end, did you try and? I mean, so I didn't have to try and make sense of it at the end. I just enjoyed the whole experience. And part of me wants to kind of deconstruct it a little bit, but I don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I understood the story. I was disappointed when it ended. I was like, oh, it's over. And so there wasn't a whole lot I felt like I needed to deconstruct. I think mainly I would like to see it again because there are some characters, some of the characters, I guess, they had the actors that are playing multiple parts, a few of them I didn't catch some of the multiple parts. They were playing when they were playing some of the smaller parts.
Yeah.
I would like to go back and see that. But as far as the story, I got the story. I mean, I didn't feel like I needed to really understand that any better than I did. But
what's the overall point of the movie? I mean, what's the, I guess, is there a moral?
We are all the same.
Right. The idea of division or boundaries. I mean, it's a think movie. The separateness is an illusion.
It's an illusion, yeah.
I mean, like they say in the tagline, everything is connected. And so you have these different stories that are all totally woven together like one tapestry, and you experience the tapestry. I mean, it's still kind of a linear film because the stories progress together. So it seems like when you're reaching the climactic moments, a lot of the stories are all in sync as far as the different strands in this tapestry.
Right. And I think, as far as like just the overall theme, the several things, you know, that just carry out throughout the movie where you have, I don't know what parts you want to jump to, but I mean, my favorite part was really the Somni-451 when she's being... part of what she talks about when she's being interviewed, and then part of what she talks about when she's like doing that recording when they're trying to send out the signal to help free people. And I think the guy, Hugo Weaving, you know, his character who's interviewing her before, you know, I guess I can tell the whole thing, but he's interviewing her, and then he's asking her for her version of the truth, and she says, there are no versions of the truth, there's only one truth. And then she's, you know, saying that we are all the same, we're all one thing. And so I think if people could take something away from the movie, that the theme that they kept trying to push in this movie is that there's really just one thing, and we're all just emanations out of this one thing. And then she even goes on to explain, she says, existence is to exist is to be perceived. And the only way you can exist is if you are perceived by the other. She explains that. And so the only reason for any perceived differences, which is an illusion anyway, but the only reason we have differences is just because that is just the condition of existence. Like, you can't exist, nothing can exist without something to else. You know, it's like this dualistic
thing. Without a point of view.
To observe you. Right, because you can't see yourself. Like, if you just one thing, you can't see yourself. If you want to see yourself, if you want to play with yourself or whatever. That
oh, I don't
weird,
need
okay.
anybody else
you know
to play with myself.
This is 42 minutes. We're 20 minutes in, and we lost one of our panelists on this Think Film Symposium. So we're going to take a quick pause, and we're going to see if we can get him back, and then we'll start back into this and talk about the idea of one truth.
Stop timer.
So, okay, I paused the timer. I'm hanging up on you guys. I'm going to call on a day back.
Okay.
We'll see if we can get him back.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
And we're back from our break. So professional. And we have Anade with us, and we're talking about Cloud Atlas. And Anade, we can do spoilers, but we were talking about the nature of this film. And the question is, did your brain have difficulty trying to understand this multidimensional story?
No, absolutely not. I've always been multi-track, and my mind, since my earliest memories in this lifetime anyway, has always been that of a film director. I've always perceived everything as just one huge overview of life's cinema. And hopefully one of these days, as an ex-actor, I'll go into film and be a director. But I did dabble in film, and this is just, it's one of the most exquisite tutorials as to following various soul evolutions through subsequent lifetimes, even to the point where people change drastically for the better throughout their incarnations, and sometimes not so much for the better, as with Hugh Grant's character, who had been the CEO of that, I can't remember the name of the exact nuclear power plant, but it was actually being bankrolled by the petrol interests so that people would say, oh my God, nuclear is horrible, let's go back to gas. And then in the far distant future, he became a cannibal. So, I mean, that was sort of like his soul evolution just degenerated worse and worse. And that was very metaphoric. But it's everybody should go see it. Hopefully everyone does see it. For me, it answered a lot of questions. Of course, as an artist, everything is more spoken to me through the language of symbols and allusions and metaphor. So I was just, when I left the theater after, you know, the 3 hours I was in the theater, I came out and it felt to me as though I had just come down from a trip. And I was just, for the next day, just connecting more and more that I had seen with other things in my own life and people I know. So I was delighted that a film like this got out there. Now I've got to read David Mitchell's novel on which it was based. So to see all the different parallels and what they got and what they didn't.
Now, this is a Wachowski film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the interesting thing that I forgot is how political they are. If you think about all their films, they definitely have a political message. Even though, I mean, the reason why I wanted to do this, to, you know, have a discussion about this movie is because I really felt like it was going to communicate the idea of sync quite in a quite realized way. But then, you know, we were talking, you asked, what is the moral of the story? But there is this idea in the movie that to not do the thing that you have to do is, I mean, you have to do what you know, it's like...
Is the movie about...
Doing nothing is the same as killing someone.
Doing nothing is the same as...
Say that again, Sybil?
I said doing nothing is the same as killing someone. I think that was, they said that about twice in the film in two different timelines.
Yeah, that to me was the way, yes, exactly, because with those lost opportunities, you have actually murdered time and squelched certain opportunities that can literally echo throughout the multiverse and subsequent lifetimes. That is something, as an artist myself, I let many, many years go by without producing because I was caught, I was entrenched in the drone mentality of you know, the slave corporate hierarchy, and its sloth is just a horrific sin, and that was personally what I was guiltiest of, and now I've just gone full speed ahead, and I'm trying to produce as much as possible.
There's a Harvard psychologist who, in studies, he found that people don't regret the mistakes they made. They have their biggest regrets in their life are from the things that they didn't do, where they had an opportunity. That's the regret, not the fact that, you know, like they made a bad stock purchase, but that they failed to make a stock purchase, or they failed to take that leap of faith. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
The fucked up thing about this movie is when I'm trying to read the damn, like, credits on IMDb, it's just five. It looks like a sync post. You know how we always do / when you're just like, you know, Jesus / Jupiter? Like, Hugo Weaving is Haskell Moore, Daddy S. Kerslang, Bill Smoke, Nurse Noakes, Boardman, Methy, Old Georgie.
The sink devil. That was the most interesting role to me, that this devil figure that was haunting Tom Hanks in the bizarro cave / future sci-fi portion of this narrative.
Right.
Speak about that.
I saw him, this is how I looked at it. If everyone here is familiar with Julian James, magnum opus was the breakdown in the evolution of consciousness and the breakdown of the bicameral mind. And as far ahead as we went in the storyline, I saw that living in a tribal context with Haile Berry's character coming from an off-world civilization, a colony that rescued the tribal clan from the cannibals that Hugh Grant's character was in, I looked at that as reverting back to the bicameral mind. When I don't think that, I really can't say, but I don't think that we're going back to the bicameral mind, but I believe that in that instance, the evil green-skinned, top-hatted, claw-handed, devil-like taunter was a kind of representation of the bicameral mind, where we were reverting back to a kind of hive consciousness, which I don't think we will, but I could be wrong. I mean, everything in the multiverse is cyclic, and everything does work like clockwork. I had made a comment in Facebook land the other day about how everything is like clockwork in the multiverse. Everything is like an integral cog and an integral gear, and it even goes back to that one verse from the apocryphal, meaning it was edited out by the Vatican, a Gospel of St. Thomas, wherein he says, the kingdom of heaven is upon the earth, yet man sees it not. And those of us, especially in the sync community, who do use, this was my old moniker for us, was that we are synchronauts, that we use synchronicities in our life as signposts to maneuver through the seas of our life. And that's the way I still see it. And I kind of just saw that last version of Hugo Weaving's character was a kind of taunting reminder of the primitive, primordial mind that we had actually grown out of, but then were somehow going back into. So you had this one remnant of humanity who had gone back to that and were very shamanistic and whatnot, and then you had the other remnant who were now living off-world and rescuing those of us who would stay behind to repopulate other planets out in the galaxy. And, well, that's my take.
Yeah, and I think Hugo Weaving's character, you know, he's basically a bad guy, kind of devil type of character, as you mentioned. And I think in that part of the story, I love that part too, because he's actually in Tom Hanks's mind. He's like an idea, a set of beliefs. Whereas in the other parts of the film, he's in, it's showing like the inner struggle that we have to go through as well as the outer struggle, which to me is a big, big part of what, of the reason for Think and what Think tries to teach us. And so in the outer manifestation, you know, he's this guy, he, with big corporate interests and the slaveholder, you know, throughout time, you know, he's oppressing people and things like that. So that's on the outside. But then you can also have oppression. We do have oppression inside of ourselves where we have these outdated ideas and superstitions and beliefs and belief sets and things that we have to overcome if we want to advance on an individual level. And then on the outside, we have all these, you know, oppressive beliefs and structures that we have to overcome if we want to advance as a collective soul group, you know, which is,
yes,
you know, what I think the movie is about we, if we can't see, this is just a big, this movie is just laying out some very basic premises. And if we can't get past these basic premises, one being the main one being that there is no difference between any of us, then we will never advance collectively as a soul group. Maybe people individually will advance, but not as a collective, because we're still stuck on this one thing. We still think that there's differences between us. So,
right, and one of the phrases in the film that they kept repeating was, "What is it? The weak are meat,
and the strong will eat,
and the strong will eat." Something like
yeah,
that.
Yep.
And so there's this, and you think about the Wachowskis, and it really comes down to this notion of exploitation. Is, you know, that's one of the other things that kept coming up is, there's a natural order to this world, and those who go against it, you know, find difficulty. Or, and so the idea that, you know, this, like you said, the Hugo Weaving Think Devil, where he's whispering in his ear, telling him, you know, don't do this, because this isn't, it's that belief system that's holding the universe together as it is in the status quo, you know, its current construction.
Okay, wait. Because I think in the other Wachowski film, The Matrix, basically Keanu Reeves has to become Hugo Weaving. You see what I mean? He has to integrate himself into the virus that is Hugo Weaving. It's interesting because Hugo Weaving says people are a virus, and then he becomes a virus. But also his name is he just has this iconic imagery to me, having to do with, okay, say his last name is Weaving, which has to do with Athena. Athena is known for owls and armor, and Hugo Weaving is like an armored owl in the Guardians of Ga'ul. Guardian usually has to do with aliens for some reason, but I think what you said is interesting to me, because this whole we need Think for space travel. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like Think is sort of somehow an evolutionary step for us to leave the planet. Am I understanding you guys right by talking about that?
Yes, for us to be accepted in the universal community, because right now we're behind.
Right.
We are behind, exactly. And I think that we've come here from afar, so many of us. Even my mother, well, this goes back to the Thuringian side of the family, taught that all the various races here were from other star systems, and this is kind of like a mediation point to make sure that we can go back. So just like Sybil said, just like you said, Will and Douglas, I know you have this kind of perspective. We're here. It's kind of like a respite, and then we're going to go back. But we have to prove ourselves. And I think that it's not so much in our mundane accomplishments is as much as it is as accelerating our consciousness so that we're at a higher frequency. Because I absolutely believe that we're all capable of magic working and miracles, and that jump off point from Earth Mother again is a vindication of our existence in the greater scheme.
Well, so one of the the aspect that I think about is, and this is like Sink's next chapter, is the notion of time. And so in this film, we're watching all these different narratives, and they're happening simultaneously. I just wonder, you know, about, because I read another book this summer called Gods Without Men, and you get the sense that even though some of the stories are set in the quote-unquote past, that that is irrelevant because they're all woven together. And so this is the thing that I'm thinking about in terms of Sink lately, is how we're interacting with the future and the past. You know, these and those might be concepts because Sink somehow transcends time.
Yes, because I think, I personally don't feel time really does not exist. Time is just a construct that we have accepted here.
Right.
That doesn't exist probably in other places in the universe. It's not a natural occurrence. It's a construct that we've created based on nothing natural. And so,
it's just a measurement. Like an inch.
Yeah, it's just a measurement. Arbitrary.
Inches don't really exist either.
Yeah, we just made them up. And so, and we can agree to stick to them, but we don't need to be just bound by it. It's just like some kind of just overriding factor. But we treat time like it's just, we can't do anything without time. And other places in the universe, people wouldn't think that way. So I think movies like this and Sink, they're tools, I think, because I think we have to learn how to think non-linearly because we have to break out of that. It's the same thing, all these state ways of thinking that we have, where it's only one way to do something, and this is the only way it can be, and all of that has to go. All of it. And you have to open your mind and your consciousness and expand to be able to look at things from different angles and different directions and be more fluid in your thinking.
That shit's got to go.
Gotta go. Because once you start experiencing Sink, I mean, some things are just so... You can't believe there's some instances where you can't really believe in linear time and then actually experience some of the things that probably all of us have experienced with Sink that are just so out of bounds. But they actually happen, and they happen, and you know they happen. You saw it. And, I mean, there's no way you can explain it if you actually just want to hold to the fact that linear time is real.
That's interesting because one of the things that this film has caused me to do is to re-look at Tom Hanks. And, like, when Forrest Gump came out, I had a huge number of Sinks. But this is pre, you know, Sink as a concept days, you know, Sink as an explanation, or, like, just even – so this is what – I don't remember. When is that, like, 94 or 95? You know, so you can. It's funny to go back in time and look at things that are obvious Sinks, and then I start exploring composite characters and this kind of thing, but I don't have any way to explain it yet. You know, it's like the evolution of my Sinkual thinking. Sinkuality.
You
like
did not just say that. That's classic. That was very sensual.
I mean, also one of the also speaking of that, I had as with my first appearance on the show in May, I had had that mind blowing Sink with the spring cleaning and then the lady TJ and the finding the cat skeleton, and all of these things to me poured in from every direction of consciousness and existence to pinpoint that we, as the minute drop in the ocean, we still comprise. There was also that metaphor in the movie, how an ocean is just a composite of the many, many different drops together or something like that. I can't remember the exact quote. But I mean, how the universe itself is consciousness, and we are all integral, important parts, no matter how insignificant we think our role is, we all have important conveyances to give to everyone else, and everyone else has important things imperative things in the broader scheme of things. And that's another wonderful message in Cloud Atlas. Despite all the chicanery and the one-upmanship and the backstabbing and the corporate takeover and all the bad stuff, there were also just as many and more positive and good things occurring to keep us all afloat. Even though there's this one channel on YouTube, for instance, I think it's called Badass, and they review pop culture, and they review film and video games, etc. And one of the interviewers had the Wachowskis on with their co-director. I can't remember his name. Starts with a T.
It's like Tweaker, but it's not.
Something like that. Tweeber or something like that.
He directed Run, Lola, Run.
Oh, wow. Okay, all right. And that was when I was working in a video store when that came out. Remember videos? But at any rate, the guy was like, to me, this ultimately says that this is one of the most magnificent atheistic manifestos. I'm like, what? I'm like, first of all, like, the physical multiverse is manifestation of God consciousness to begin with. And I think that Lana herself, and maybe Andy, was very reticent to actually say that they weren't deists, but that they wanted to view the presentation of consciousness and evolution and accelerated awareness in a kind of secular fashion, but that there was a profound romance of our roles in spiritual evolution within the context of the story, which is why we've had, you know, so many different depictions of various soul growth through the subsequent incarnations of the characters.
And that is just about 42 minutes. This has been episode 55. We're talking about Cloud Atlas. And next week we have, it's election day next week, and we're going to go down under with Stefan Jablonski. But thank you, Anade and Sybil. Maybe we'll carry
thanks
the talk over a little bit and see if we can't mine this a little bit more. But so that's 42 minutes. Thanks, Will. Sounds like you had a blast in Orlando.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so we'll talk to you next week. And I think it'll be exciting because since it's election day, and then we'll be talking to Australia, we'll actually know the results before they happen because, you know, we'll again.
15 hours ahead.
Yeah. Time, yeah, he's a day ahead. There is no time. All right, well. Thanks, everyone. That's 42 minutes.
We're out of time.
Take care. Yeah.
Thank you.